Hello, this is Stephanie and I'm bringing you the latest broadsheet from Salisbury District Hospital, produced by the art care team with the Elevate artists. And this month, Elevate, using words and images to inspire you to talk about science permeating through our everyday lives, from work to hobbies, influencing us in ways we are not always conscious of. And David Davies on the first page recalls conversations with patients that reveal this hidden science. Making connections with conversation is so important to our well-being, as it is remembering things we've enjoyed in our lives. Often, to my surprise, that's where science comes in, the detail behind people's jobs or hobbies, how things work in building, textiles, farming, fishing, engineering, nursing, caring, cooking, cycling, antiques, gardening, reading, music, dance, art. Very quickly broadens our horizons, sparks our curiosity and fills gaps, bringing an understanding between people, often with tremendous fun and lively memories. Here are some extracts told with enthusiasm and pride from creative conversations I've had with patients in hospital over the years about work and hobbies. The names have all been changed to protect identities. Rita was a photographic colourist until colour film made that job obsolete. It was fascinating and related a lot to watercolour painting. The results were always personal and a cross between art and photography. I think this hand colourist look has become fashionable again, but using high technique nowadays. Dennis told me, "I found school hard, but I was a retained fireman for 35 years. I was fascinated by all the equipment, the pumps, hose fixings, and how everything was maintained so you could rely on it." Iris says, "My younger brother Sam was a very good engineer. He could take anything apart and put it back together. A sense of being able to know what was wrong and mend things. And when we were children, I often helped him." Stan was a Navy photographer in Malta, and he said, "My work was cutting edge at the time. My job was to photograph target shelling after training events. It was aerial work using huge 5-inch film width." And Margaret told me, "This 1940s early photograph reminds me and my father. I was about 7 or 8. I used to help him on the farm with everything, including mechanical things. Nothing came for free. There was so much to be done." And from old photographs, George was able to talk about his masonry work. "You had to consider the size and weight of the undressed stone and the dressed blocks, how you were going to move them safely. We worked as a team using block and tackle, and we used metal churns to make trestles. Sand, lime, cement mixers were 12:4:1 ratio." Helen had a huge interest in live music and had seen the Rolling Stones, David Bowie and the Beatles play live. "I've noticed how the sound systems have improved over the years, the mixing desks and the speaker systems." Derek remembered early tractors and paraffin fuel. "It smelt terrible. You could smell it everywhere. We used mechanical rakes and harvesting and threshing machines. We used 3- and 2-tine pitchforks, and they were the only two tools you had, and their design made them multi-purpose." Ellen had a career as a scientist and a love for psychology, watercolour painting and poetry. "I love how these things link. One thing makes you understand the other better." Stan spoke about his work with parts and accessories for the car industry. The rhythm of car manufacturing, the assembly lines, of supplying accessories was so familiar and great fun. Anne had taught Latin and loved language and dialect. "I enjoy the sounds that words make, especially in poems. The patterns are like music." And David also has a hand-tinted postcard showing the clock tower on Fisherton Street in Salisbury. Our centre spread this week is written by Hannah Lefevre, and Hannah lives in an off-grid small holding in Somerset. And she writes, "February is a lovely time of year to enjoy a cut-back garden. As bulbs raise their heads and winter sunshine streams through the bare trees and hedgerows to lift the spirits. At this point in the year, with the palpable increases in daylight and moderately improved temperatures, we breathe a sigh of relief that the worst of the winter is over. With this edition's science theme, I'm reflecting on some of the main elements of off-grid living. Solar electric. 5 solar panels on the east wall of the home and 12 smaller garden panels provide enough electric for most months of the year. Positioned in a sheltered valley, we enjoy protection from storms and heavy winds, but reduced solar in the winter. In the 3 weeks either side of winter solstice, we depend on the east wall panels, allowing just a few solar hours each morning. As the sun emerges over the southern hill in mid-January, we enjoy increased light and from there on generally have sufficient supplies. We happily forego many domestic plug-in items throughout the year, while the priority fridge and freezer are kept in cold store on timers to maximise solar hours. Our backup electric comes in the form of lithium batteries and an emergency petrol generator, which sounds a few times each winter. Water. Outdoor water is harvested into multiple containers throughout the site, and regular watering of the polytunnel is a priority. Meanwhile, the outdoor home produce receives water at its seedling stage, and thereafter we trust that the mulch, soil moisture and rain will suffice. For domestic use, water is stored in black barrels, and when solar allows, it is electrically pumped and stored in 2 small barrels in the roof arc of the mezzanine bedroom to feed the kitchen sink, bath and outdoor shower. Heating. Our home and water are heated via a solid fuel Rayburn, which we tend to use from October to February. The wood mostly comes from our winter cutbacks on site and is cut and stored a year in advance. Excess Rayburn heat runs into a radiator stationed above it, and the back boiler feeds the bath, shower and kitchen sink. If a frost is due, the outdoor shower is turned onto a gentle drip to avoid pipes bursting. And Hannah has a photograph of the electronic epicentre of our off-grid system, complete with indoor and outdoor temperature gauges, solar monitors, lithium and lead switches, USB ports, 12 volt sockets and an inverter for higher voltage plug-in chargers. And the photograph is a mix of wires going into all of those different types of chargers that Hannah just talked about. But she does say the low voltage makes the wiring safe for the amateur. We keep a close and frequent eye on all of these aspects. It's a mindful existence, but requires constant attention to keep our life comfortable. And Hannah also has a photograph of solar panels on the cabin and on the wood pile. And also on this page, we have a poem called Orbiting to Spring, written by Fiona Lockwood. 93 million miles away, it is central to our lives. Every day we can count on it being up there in the sky. The great gas ball called sun glows glaringly ultra bright, emitting electromagnetic fields with infrared and ultraviolet light. In winter, it hovers low as Earth tilts us on its axis, taking us into cold, dark space, peaking with the winter solstice. We spend more time in darkness and adopt a torpid state. Coldness creeps through our being and many creatures hibernate. But sun is ever present, gently melting the morning frost, and Earth is ever orbiting towards the warmer vernal equinox. It is such a gradual process, but our star is so very great that with every passing day, we reclaim the energy that it radiates. Increasing spectral light creates the season of renewal, longer, brighter days, and hope ever springs eternal. Warmth returns with open arms and plants eagerly come to life. Flower buds start forming and green shoots appear overnight. A new season brings unique gifts, but the promise of spring in the air lifts us to the greatest heights, and expectation is everywhere. So yes, thank our lucky star around which we go again. It has a truly epic stellar role to which we are inextricably beholden. And the final page, the back page, is written by me, Stephanie, and is called Kale Deserves a Cheer. And there's a large photograph close up of kale covered in snow as it grows. February. New life in the garden begins as the snowdrop bulbs spear through the earth. They receive so much love and affection, whilst out in the fields a hardy vegetable has been growing and stands decorated by and positively enjoying the snow and frost. There is so much kale and cabbage ready to eat. Not surprising then that one of the Anglo-Saxon names for the month of February is sprout kale. Kale deserves a cheer. Love it or hate it, kale might not be the food of love you associate with February, but throughout history, it has been one of the most commonly grown vegetables in Europe. In Scotland, the traditional diet is so rich with kale that the word kale, also spelled K-A-I-L, is the same word as the word for food. There's a common saying that when someone isn't feeling well enough to eat, that person is off one's kale. And a small kitchen vegetable garden is referred to as the kale yard. Kale is very hearty and able to stand up to temperatures as low as 10 degrees below zero. A heavy frost doesn't do damage. In fact, the frost enhances the flavour as it encourages the plant to transform starches in its leaves into sugars. As it is so easy to grow and highly nutritious, during the Second World War, the British government encouraged citizens to grow kale to make up for nutrients potentially lost due to rationing. Kale is a food superstar. It's so versatile you can eat it raw, as well as steam, roast, braise, boil, and add it to whatever you are cooking, or even blend into a smoothie. Kale deserves to be the food we love because it loves us. It is so rich in nutrients. It can be beneficial for our bodies and health in so many ways. Kale is rich in beta-carotene that our bodies turn into vitamin A and is good for hair and skin. Vitamin C and E and zinc, which all play a role in our eye health. It's high in fibre and water, which aids a regular and healthy digestion. And vitamin K for our bones. One serving of raw kale has just 33 calories and only 7 grams of carbohydrates, so it's a very diabetes friendly, weight friendly vegetable. Kale, a member of the Brassicaceae or cabbage family, has firm curly leaves that do not form a head and is usually deep green or purple. It's a cruciferous vegetable from the Latin crucifere, meaning cross bearing, because the four petals resemble a cross. Have a good look at the patterns on the leaves next time you are chopping it up ready to cook. Enjoy munching that leafy goodness.